WK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 8 o'clock. Good morning. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Quick Trip now confirms its system outage was caused by a cyber attack. The outage affected everything from the convenience store's app to its website, payroll systems, and its customer rewards program. A company spokesman says there's no indication the hackers got a hold of customers' credit card information. The customer rewards system is back online, but the Quick Trip app and the website are still down. Governor Evers is replacing the Wisconsin Elections Commissioner, who was fired by the state Senate this week. Nate Wegehout has more.
Senate Republicans fired Commissioner Joe Czarnecki on Tuesday. Senator Mark Spreitzer told the Devil's Advocates radio show last night that Evers moved to replace him immediately. If he didn't, he said Republicans would have had the chance to fire Megan Wolf.
It takes 4 votes on WEC to appoint an administrator, but it actually just takes a majority of those present and voting to remove an administrator. So if we didn't replace Joe Czarnecki immediately, Republicans could call a meeting, and by a 3-2 vote, they could actually fire Megan Wolf.
Spreitzer did not name the new appointee other than that they are a former Eau Claire election clerk. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Evers has also said he'll waste no time replacing the Natural Resources Board members the Senate fired. The board takes an important vote on the state's wolf management policy next week. A lawsuit against Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and 3 former Wisconsin Supreme Court justices will continue. A Dane County judge decided not to dismiss the case yesterday. A liberal law group says Voss, as well as David Prosser, John Wilcox, and Patience Rogensack, broke Wisconsin's open meetings laws. Voss asked the former justices to advise him as he considers whether or not to impeach Justice Janet Protasiewicz. State and local governments would be banned from shutting down religious gatherings during public emergencies under an assembly bill that got a hearing yesterday. The bill's author is Republican Representative Ty Bodden.
People should have the freedom to practice wherever, however they want, under our Constitution, and that right should not be violated under any circumstances.
The bill stems from opposition to public health orders during the COVID-19 pandemic. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Health and life aren't the only things patients have to worry about. Tracy Smith of the American Cancer Society says the financial impact can be devastating.
Depending on the stage of that diagnosis, cancer can start from $250,000 all the way up to millions of dollars.
Advocates say there are resources available to help. The Urban Institute says about 1 in every 5 American families has medical debt in collections. That's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. A funeral visitation is scheduled for next Saturday for Tom Taraska.
The Hall of Fame coach from Arrowhead was killed this week in a car crash in Merton. The visitation on the 28th starts at 10, followed by a massive Christian burial at 2 with a private family burial. In 2009, Arrowhead High School paid tribute to his contributions by naming its football and track stadium Taraska Stadium in his honor. His achievements include a record-breaking coaching stint with 4 championship teams and the most appearances in the WIAA Division I state football tournament. Pete Schwabe, Civic Media News.
BMO Bank is set to cut 44 positions at its downtown Milwaukee location. According to the Milwaukee Business Journal, the company cited changing business needs as the reason behind the layoffs. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The Bucks wrap up the preseason tonight. Good morning, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks host the Memphis Grizzlies tonight at Fiserv Forum. Tip-off time, 7 o'clock. Chris Middleton coming off that knee surgery in May, expected to see his first action tonight. The Bucks making roster moves, releasing Drew Timmy and signing Glenn Robinson III. The son of the big dog, Glenn Robinson, the number one overall pick from Milwaukee back in 1994. And then there's the Terry Stotts story, a former Milwaukee Bucks head coach who rejoined the team this spring as an assistant, resigning yesterday. Bucks head coach Adrian Griffin.
You know, it was Terry's decision, and I respected that. We did have a great conversation. I can't disclose, you know, what we spoke about out of respect for him, but We're still excited about the season.
Stotts was the Trailblazers head coach while Damian Lillard was there.
Everybody was kind of surprised by it. You know, it kind of came out of nowhere. But for me, knowing Terry as long as I've known him, you know, playing for him for 9 years, and to see him go is unfortunate. You know, it's sad to see him go, but everything is still moving forward.
Baseball, the Diamondbacks beating the Phillies 2-1 in Arizona. Philly leads the series 2-1. The Astros over the Rangers 10-3 to tie that series at 2 games apiece. In college women's volleyball, Wisconsin ranked number 1 with an important match in Nebraska tomorrow night against the number 2 ranked Cornhuskers. Both teams undefeated, 18-0. The match begins tomorrow night at 7 o'clock and good seats in Lincoln going as high as $400 a ticket. College football, the Badgers at Illinois tomorrow afternoon. The kickoff in Champaign at 2:30. Wisconsin with a new quarterback, Braden Locke, in his first start. Head coach Luke Fickell says he seems to have the support of his teammates.
Guys rallying around him, guys understanding who he is, guys having confidence and belief in him. We got a small glimpse of what he has been able to do just this past week in a very tough situation. But I think this will be a different thing for him walking in the door knowing what he's got to be able to do.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK. Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? Big
party, man.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing?
Well, we made it to Friday, so I'm doing okay. How are you, Earl?
I'm doing fine, man. I'm glad it's Friday as well. And it's Friday, that means my co-host Sandy Williams is back in the saddle again. How you doing, Sandy?
No saddle, sir. I'm good.
Yeah. You're not? All right. Repeat that.
I said, no saddle sores. I'm good.
All right. You know, Sandy, a lot to talk about, as always. But, you know, we want to, we really want to, I guess, Sandy, help our listening audience understand. You and I talk about a lot of national issues and you know, well, people may go ahead.
Well, you know, I think the magic of civic media, this networks that's this station is a part of, is this notion of bringing things back to locality, right? That all politics is local, and it is. And what's important to people is what is local. You know, what's happening at the school with their children, what's happening at the hospital in their local hospital, what's happening in their community. And that's what civic media is about, is community focus. And I think the reason we feel compelled to talk a good deal about broad national and international matters is all that stuff matters locally. Because, you know, the positions we take internationally and the decisions we make about how vigilant we need to be in the world with respect to providing arms and providing aid abroad has everything to do with how much money is available to provide locally to that to child daycare for Tom, Dick, and Mary up the block, their children, for how we provide health care in our localities. You know, what's happening and what's becoming more and more clear with the American national budget is that there is a finite amount of money that the federal government has to spend. And in spite of the fact that for the last 40 years we've been willing to dip deeply into deficits to provide whatever the politicians decide we're going to do, it's finite. And the more we spend in our defense budget, you know, the growing towards $1 trillion we spend there, takes money away from what we can spend otherwise. And most of what we spend otherwise, when we talk about investing in the people of America, we're really talking about investing in each locality, in the interest that localities have in education and healthcare, in the pensions that everyone will have, and it's local America that flies the American flags and are the most patriotic of our people, and it seems to me that that when we exercise that patriotism, we also ought to exercise the power we have to contribute to the policies that go into what we're doing with American money.
You know, Sandy, you said it so well, because when we're talking about these local issues, as you stated, I mean, you know, Joe Biden on yesterday talked about another $100 billion that we're going to commit. And the government is already upside down financially. And so the $100 billion is going to be at the cost of something else.
Well,
right?
Yes. I mean, you know, I think that one of the ways I think that we can get down to avoiding highly partisan discussions is to just get back to common sense politics. And common sense tells us that, yes, the American government can run deficits every year. We have since World War II, except for about three. But the size of the deficit might matter, right? We can't have indefinite or infinite sized deficits. It's finite. So if we spend $100 billion here, it does take away from the amount of money that we have available to spend there. And whereas here might be in aid to Israel or Ukraine, there might be aid to Tom, Dick, and Mary in Amory or in various parts of Wisconsin, where we're worried about daycare, healthcare, education, pensions, all the things that where the rubber hits the road for us as people. And so that's why I guess I keep wanting to get back to talking about it from the context of understanding that when we make these decisions, it is ultimately about the family budget that is the American family. And the American family budget needs to be set up sensibly, and it needs to be a decision that's made with the input from all the members of that family.
So when we're talking about, again, as I was listening to the president yesterday, we've got to make this sacrifice as the American people for long-term stability of our nation with these investments in Ukraine and Israel. The way he's explaining it is he understands the American people are struggling, are having a tough go of it, but you have to understand, this is what I got out of what he's saying, that we have no choice but to do this for long-term stability. Well, he can say that, but when you're asking people in this country who themselves are at wit's end and trying to hold together their families, that we're supposed to understand the long-term ramifications of continuing to spend money that we basically don't have, and that the sacrifice has to keep coming from them. I understand why people are, taken aback.
Well, I think that his speech was the notion of talking to the people about the family budget, and he was making the case for dedicating a significant part of that family budget to this money that's going to go abroad. I simply think that over the past decades, we haven't had enough of that discussion. So we've become pregnant with a bunch of foreign policies that have taken us in this direction. You know, and I was encouraged in the talk that there was a talk about the two-state solution for Israel, because it is true that in this period where there is a lot of aid going, there is a bunch of leverage the United States has to try and use this point in time to try and get to stop kicking this two-state solution can down the road and maybe get the parties in the Mideast to focus on solving that problem, which would be a good investment for America, because absent solving that problem, America ends up footing the bill for what ends up being the result of the problem.
So, Sandy, so we asked the American people to make these sacrifices. And it's not the first time. It's always whenever there's, you know, even if it's a proxy war or whatever it is, whenever our nation is in this kind of situation, it always asks the people to make these sacrifices. Well, the people are saying, those who are really struggling to make ends meet, we're not in a position to continue to make the sacrifices you're asking unless you do something to make our lives a little bit more palatable. Is it safe to say that?
Well, yeah, I think it's a twofold thing. One, I think that part of America, which is the median income people and everyone close to the median income and everyone below that, are living paycheck to paycheck. When you're living paycheck to paycheck, you don't even have time to think or wonder about our foreign affairs. You've got your head down doing whatever you can. You might be listening to talk radio or watching talk TV and getting filled with some notions about things, but you don't really have time to do independent thinking. Yeah, and you are struggling, and you're under a great deal of psychic stress. And so, those people, and it's a majority of our people, are under a great deal of duress, and they need leadership in this whole area of this discussion. They need someone sitting at the head of the table who's going to help them have this discussion, and they need their local politicians to play a very active role in making sure that what the government is focusing itself on is solving the problems that America faces. And America faces problems that are all of them amplified through the localities. So every problem in America is looked at through the prism of the locality in which everyone lives. And it's from that prism that we need to begin to have our discussion. The paralysis of the Republican Congress is not responsive to this local prism.
So, Sandy, so it's safe to say that we're in a transition period in our nation when it comes to the American people and their futures. And so people don't see it clearly. You know, we're no longer in control of everything. And so you always bring up China and things like that. So we don't control those things as much as we used to anymore.
Well, but we do control. I mean, our politicians do have a big impact on it. Our relationship with China was going along kind of swimmingly for a while until we got into the tariff war with them and all the edges began to get sharpened. And, you know, over the last 6 years, things have taken a major left turn with respect to the relationship to China. China's a major player in the world. It has a significant impact on us. The disruption of the supply chain has had a significant impact on us locally. So that supply chain, when it ran amok, and it ran amok in some respects because of our foreign affairs, it had a very direct effect in Racine and in Amory and Milwaukee and all sorts of localities in Wisconsin because of what it did to the price of things and the availability of things, which of course we're all frustrated about. And it's the policies we adopt that might have an impact on those things that we need to get input on. And in the current process where money has so much sway in politics, where our two-party system seems to be paralyzed based on gerrymandering and extreme partisanship, until we grapple with those things, get rank voting, install some things that have an impact on that so that Tom, Dick, and Mary have input, locally speaking, when we look at things through that local prism, we can just be very, very frustrated about what it is that our federal government is doing with respect to us locally.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.
A great football matchup brewing as Carroll University welcomes Wheaton College to Schneider Stadium this Saturday, October 21st. The Pioneers, 4-1, Thunder, 5-1, rank 13th in the country and second in the CCIW. You can catch all of the action live with Don, Johnny, and Triple G. Pregame at 12:30, kickoff at 1 p.m. It's the Pios and the Thunder this Saturday afternoon on the Shaw WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, and the Civic Media app.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs around 57 today, under mainly clear skies, northwest winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast tonight, chance for scattered showers, lows around 41. Chance for scattered showers again tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 56. Overcast skies, low 50s Sunday, warmer Monday, with highs in the mid-50s and scattered showers. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 48 degrees.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and the Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and the Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm gonna need to parachute when I get through walking these blues. When I get back to New Orleans, I've got my suitcase in my hand.
You remember what I was saying?
I can still do the stroll. That was an easy dance. That's what this was.
Really?
There was a dance called the stroll. That's what you did.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's domino.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, it's Friday. It means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams. So Sandy, it is paramount that the American people understand that you can't separate, what's going on and put it on the back shelf nationally.
The old saying, all politics are local. All politics relate to local is you can look at it both ways. I mean, all politics is local sounds like the grassroots runs the show. But the fact is that in the current version of America, the grassroots is pretty far from running the show because of the impact of money in America and the process that we use to formulate foreign policy. It's pretty clearly not grassroots oriented. It's not developed at the grassroots. It's in many respects imposed on the grassroots. And it's imposed on the grassroots as a condition of patriotism. You know, if you want to be a patriot, right, line up on these foreign policies. So I'm simply putting that on its head a little bit and saying, look, all politics is local because all politics affects localities. And therefore, we in the localities need to be very actively interested in and imposing our will upon our politicians so that the policies adopted are good for us locally.
Let me ask you, Sandy, President Biden, with his Bidenomics or whatever they call it, I forgot what the
Bidenomics, that's it. Yep.
Bidenomics catchphrase was, attempted to address some of the things that ill effect some of the American people who are struggling. He tried to put some things in place to address Tom, Dick, and Mary. Is it safe to say that?
Well, yeah. I mean, the act, clearly the Inflation Reduction Act the Bidenomics principles behind it involve inserting the government into the economy in ways that could possibly generate jobs and could refocus the economy in the directions that are the future. So the putting a bunch of money into the chip industry, computer chip industry, is designed to, one, create jobs in the chip industry, and two, to refocus the American economy in the direction of being able to be more self-sufficient in chips. And that's just an example. There was similar things done in renewable energy, things done in job training. So yes, I think it definitely was in the right direction in terms of having a focus on
local. But he was accused. He was accused of overspending, spending too much money, money that we didn't have.
Well, you know, it's interesting when the government starts spending money on investing in people, in American people, we start worrying about how much we spend. When we are investing money by spending it in our defense budget, we can't spend enough.
It's true.
So, you know, it really depends on sauce for the goose is apparently not sauce for the gander in the terms of analyzing expenditures, because we worry a lot about deficits when we look at what we call entitlements, which are money flowing to people for various forms of government investment in people. We worry a lot about, there's a lot of discussion about whether those need to be pared back. We don't have in the same breath discussions about what we ought to be doing about a major portion of our budget, which is our defense budget, and money spent essentially abroad.
Well, Sandy, rugged individualism is now always talked about, where people should be able to pull themselves up and they need to be able to do all these things. But the time is not as amenable to rugged individualism as it once was, right?
Well, you know, I've talked about it maybe a couple of years ago. This guy, Albert de Tocqueville, who is this French historian philosopher who traveled around America in the late 1820s and early 1830s, wrote a book about his trip in America, his memoir. And he basically talked about the individualism of Americans, and he talked about how it was that the sense of community in America was not anywhere near raised to the same level as it was in Europe. In Europe, people basically think about the community as something that they're a part of and that they see the value of the community investment. And he talked about how this rugged individualism in America differentiated America from what he was used to. He thought it both could be an advantage in terms of the ruggedness of it and the exploration kind of aspects of it. He thought it was also a disadvantage in the fact that Americans could lose sight of the value of community. And the guy was dead on, you know, because I think we have had both the advantage of our rugged individualism, but we also see the disadvantages of it. We don't look at education or healthcare or the things that Europeans look at as investments in the community. We look at it as potentially from the prism of thinking of it as a handout to an individual.
People freeloading
because they're getting this benefit. They're not paying for it themselves. And yet we've created through this process, this coopered together healthcare process, we've created a healthcare industry in the United States that is about twice as expensive as healthcare anyplace else. And rugged individualism be damned. We can't afford it on an individual basis, the way things have been set up.
Sandy, we've got to go to a break. David from San Francisco, hang on. We'll come to you after the break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. It's Friday. It's my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
I'm walking to New Orleans.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Humanitarian aid could begin flowing into Gaza today, where food, water, and fuel is running out for tens of thousands of Palestinians. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres visited the Egypt Rafah crossing.
We absolutely need to have these trucks moving as quickly as possible and as many
as necessary.
Israel bombarded the Gaza Strip today, hitting areas where Palestinians had been told to seek safety. Republican Jim Jordan's just held a news conference to say nope, he's not giving up his uphill battle to become the new House Speaker.
The quickest way to get all this working is to get a Speaker elected. That's what I hope we can do today.
American soldier Travis King's been charged months after he bolted across the border into North Korea. CBS's Jennifer Kuiper.
Documents obtained by CBS News show they include desertion, assaulting other soldiers and officers, and soliciting and possessing child pornography.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The two-year anniversary of the Waukesha Christmas Parade attack is about a month away, and city leaders are busy planning the memorial. On Tuesday, November 21st at 4:39 p.m., the city will dedicate the Main Street Parade Memorial. The ceremony will take place at the Five Points intersection in downtown Waukesha. A homemade haunted house attraction in West Allis faces its final year due to a zoning ordinance issue. The Novak family has been transforming their home into Novak Manor for Halloween since 2012. They draw thousands of visitors every year. However, a permit issue will force them to close after this year. Despite efforts to resolve the situation with the city, the family says this year's Halloween event will be a grand farewell. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website, civicmedia.us. Social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website, civicmedia.us.
You can dance every dance with the guy who gives you the eye, let him hold you tight. You can smile every smile for the man who held your hand neath the pale moonlight. But don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, save the last dance for me.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines and David from San Francisco. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Oh, thanks, Earl and Sandy. I can give you the good news that avocados are less than $2 now.
Well, that is good news. Guacamole.
Oh, kidding. Yeah, and I'm glad you raised the issue of community spirit. When you start looking at, when I call up the right-wing shows, and they're always yammering about how much taxes they're paying, I raise the issue of, well, taxes used to be a big pot of money that we, the people, get to use to buy ourselves something nice. We buy libraries, we buy schools, we buy museums, we get fresh water systems, we get sewer systems, we get something nice for ourselves, and we build it to last. And that usually kind of slows them down, because everybody agrees they don't want sewage in the street, and they want to be able to trust the water that comes out of their tap. And the idea of being able to shut down government means shutting down the money that we put in for April 15th, and that we not only don't get to expend it, but that it goes into a mysterious pot of con artists who are still being paid while they get to withhold the money from us. So, yeah, I've been raising that. And the other thing, you're probably aware, earlier this year, the Saudis decided that they don't want to use the U.S. dollar when they sell oil. They want to use some other currency, some other world's currency, as the basis for the transaction. And when you start looking at, say, the old movie Goldfinger, you know, where somebody tries to go in there and steal the entire treasury of a whole nation, well, that's what they're up to. These con artists that are trying to shut down government, that are trying to stop American spending, they're basically trying to take away our ability to protect and defend ourselves, but to buy ourselves something nice. But in addition, the International Monetary Fund it's been in effect since post-World War II, and it is the world's currency, and everybody reflects their value against us.
So hang on a second. So Sandy, I remember a man named Muammar Gaddafi in Libya who tried to take his oil and the oil of the African nations off of the dollar and create their own currency. And if Saudi is attempting to do the exact same thing, that's not something that's in the best interest of.
Well, it isn't just Saudi Arabia, actually. Some of the biggest oil reserve countries in the world have participated in that notion. Venezuela, who we apparently are now beginning to cozy up to a bit because we're interested in freeing up their oil reserves and maybe making sure that they don't go off the dollar with respect to the use of their reserves. Venezuela has the biggest oil reserves apparently in the world.
Right.
But Russia, Saudi Arabia, two countries in particular who are some of the biggest oil producers in the world, are pretty hell-bent on getting off the dollar. And it's been the petrodollar ever since the period of Nixon, when the petrodollar became the mode for this purchase and sale of oil across the world, that has helped fortify the dollar as the world currency. So David's on to something. We have to be careful about the policies we adopt, and we have to begin to have, I think, consistent foreign policies and careful foreign policies, because losing the dollar as the trusted foreign currency, foreign exchange currency, will have a massive effect on our economy, which incidentally means that our localities suffer. Because the problem with our national economy is that, yes, everything is local, but the national economy impacts each of us locally. And the things that affect our national economy have their impact in each of our communities.
You know, so Sandy, and you talked about this many times, about the impact of losing the dollar as the number one mode of trade in the world. And we haven't seen pain yet in this nation. If that happens, we'll really see it, right?
Well, if that happens, it will be a watershed moment in the world economy, and it will definitely be a watershed moment in the U.S. economy.
Could it happen?
And Oh, it can happen. I mean, everyone theoretically looks at it and theorizes that the strength of our dollar is such that it will be very difficult to have it happen. And even though there are several big economies, China being one of them, who are sort of hell-bent on making it happen. And one of the bases of this sort of multipolar world that Putin and Xi talked about in the last couple of days at their meeting, what is the notion that they would dislodge the world from using the dollar as the world currency? That's one of the prime indices they would have of having a multipolar world. That would have a huge impact on our economy.
So when you go back and again talk about, you know, the localities and the struggling of the different parts of this country, that will have an even major, broader impact even on the mom and pops of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the frustrations of us locally is that what happens to us in the national economy, it happens to us and doesn't happen through us or because of us in many respects. And so I think that what's important is that everyone in their local politics understand that the people they elect and send to the Congress and the U.S. Senate are having an impact or could potentially have an impact on our economy. And that economy is going to have, it's like the weather in which we live. It feels like Mother Nature from a local standpoint, but actually we do have our finger on the scale in Congress with respect to what happens. And it is our national policies which could have an impact. So that, you know, we've had an impact on pushing these other countries in the direction of wanting a multipolar world. And some of that has to do with the use, for instance, of economic sanctions on a pretty broad scale basis. You know, we economically sanctioned and tried to strangle Venezuela. We're still strangling Cuba. We've right. attempted to corner Russia. We've threatened sanctions against China. All of these things make people scratch their head and say, all these countries that might be subject to sanction, including, I think, Saudi Arabia, who's decided, hey, you know what? We'd like to get outside that boundary line. It drives them in the direction of potentially getting off the dollar.
So our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. We are certainly going to talk about what's happening with Ukraine and with Israel. But, you know, we wanted to take a little time to try to tie that in, Sandy, to everyday Americans. Let's go to Dave from Mequon. Good morning to you, Dave. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. To follow up with David in San Francisco a little bit, he is correct. Actually, Saudi Arabia and the UAE, and there's some other new members, they're going to join
BRICS.
The BRICS, yes, starting January of 2024. And if you just saw, this is what I mentioned to Earl a while ago. So kind of, it hasn't really been talked about too much, unfortunately, but we just saw, you know, the president of China, Xi, and Putin, and they are strengthening their relationship. And one of the dark horses, India, is also starting to trade in what they call the petro yuan. And the petro yuan is basically Chinese currency. And so what's happening is, if we can't print our own money any longer, as far as, you know, taking care of that, there is terrible consequences with that. And to your point, Sandy, the fact that things are moving off, you know, with the petrol dollar, as they call it, that will have a huge, severe economic consequence. And I don't think people realize what could happen if this does go through, because we're starting to see cracks. And not only is Brazil part of, you know, BRICS and India, and now you got Saudi Arabia, and you've got some other new members joining in January. This is a connection of the dots of where they're looking, and Putin said this for the record, new world order.
So the question is, Dave, how can we stop it? We're one nation. How can we stop the world, a segment of the world, from making decisions that they feel are in the best interest of themselves?
Well, let me intervene there. Yeah. I think that one of the things we can do is we can stop incentivizing that conduct, right? So, you know, sanctioning Venezuela, the world's biggest oil reserve country, and trying to strangle it, drives it into the arms of, yes, of someone else. You know, Kissinger's real politic, and the whole reason we recognized China back in 1971 was the notion that we did not want to drive China into the arms of the Soviet Union at that point and create a strong fusion between them when there actually had always been fracture lines between them. And what we needed to do was to amplify the fracture lines and not push them together. And that was the reason for the recognition. We seem to have forgotten all that. And in the last 5 years, we've done everything we can to drive them together. And now things are reversed. Because China's is the mother load, Russia needs them, but to drive them together is to create a problem, and actually the two countries themselves, along with the people they have a good deal of impact on, are the basis for Putin's new world order. And the new world order is really one, and it's a change from the monolithic world order of America, Pax Americana, which emerged at the end of the Cold War. Before the Cold War, we did have a multipolar world. We had the Soviet Union and their bloc, and we had the West, and then we had a bunch of third world nations that were sitting on the sidelines. Now, you know, things look like they might. There's a definite movement to get it reordered.
Dave,
I would say this: the one thing, and people have to realize this, is that oil and gas, they're not going anywhere anytime soon. People have this misnomer that green energy is going to, you know, start, you know, taking over things. But the problem with green energy is the infrastructure that needs to be put into new transmission lines, the fact that we don't have enough linemen to do the work. You also have the issue of most of the materials that are needed for the batteries are coming out of the Congo, which is kind of controlled by China, essentially. It's a double-edged sword, and so really one thing, and I'll just mention, maybe Sandy won't agree with me, but one thing that has been extremely beneficial is U.S. using its own resources, and now
which are finite.
The green energy,
Dave, which are finite.
Yes, I understand that, but the finite is even more finite with green energy. If you look at the minerals. Going to cobalt, nickel,
hey,
lithium.
Hey, Dave, we have to let you go. Sandy, let you respond on the other side. All of you on the lines will come to you after the break, 844-967-2789. Be right back.
Bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events. Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons, like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly clear this afternoon with highs around 57. Northwest winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for scattered rain showers tonight. Lows dip down to about 41. Cloudy skies expected. Cloudy tomorrow. Chance for scattered showers. High of 56. Low 50s Sunday. Mid 50s Monday with a chance for scattered showers. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 48 degrees.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK. Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK.
Show as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams. Let's go to Cindy from Appleton. Good morning to you, Cindy. You say what?
Good morning. Well, if it's the United States that's been pushing all these other powers together to kind of work against us, then why are we surprised? Because what we're doing is reaping what we sowed.
Yeah, well, that was, in a nutshell. I've talked for a long time about how foreign affairs is a yin yang proposition. We're yin, and when we do something, there's a yang reaction. Particularly if what we do smells of hostility, right? When we begin to talk about preparing for war with China, what do you think they're going to do? When we begin to talk about sanctioning various countries around the world if they don't come to task, come to heel for us. You're right. A lot of what we see has not been initiated by the other side. It's really, in some respects, an echo, a reaction to what it is we've initiated.
Well, you know, a congressman and Mike, I forgot his name, on the day before was talking about preparing for war with Iran. I mean, publicly, he's out here talking like that. And what do you expect? Well, they're saying, well, Iran is now looking to, you know, get in bed with China. Well, you know, we've got NATO.
Well, of course, listen to this. I mean, you know, we've been sanctioning Iran since 1979. We've tried to corner them and driven them into the arms of anyone who will accept them, right? So are we surprised that they would turn to China or turn to Russia? No, we shouldn't be. And you know, we've never really done a lessons learned out of the whole Mossadegh experience. You know, Iran in 1953 was a democratic nation. We installed the Shah through a whole process, right, that is now clear-cut based on the evidence of history, that was the American and British Secret Service had everything to do with. And the echo from that, of installing the Shah, his regime, which was a terrible dictatorship for Iran, the reaction to that, the Khomeini.
Yeah, ran Khomeini into the hills.
And so, you know, we need, as Americans, and our localities need to demand that America does the same kind of lessons learned analysis that the businesses we work for ought to be doing in order to protect our jobs.
So, Cindy, let me, and think, anything else, Cindy?
Nope.
Thank you. Sandy, so these things that you and I are talking about, when we're talking about the history of our nation and what people should be taught. The truth should be taught.
Well, in a way, this is a little bit like critical race theory. You know, what should we teach? Should we teach the errors of our American foreign policies over the years? Should we learn in school the mistake that was the Iraq War? Should we learn in school the mistake that was our Vietnam involvement? Should we learn in school the mistakes we made in Iran in 1953 and the creation of the Shah of Iran and the echo that has had in the Mideast ever since with respect to our policies to Iran? I mean, we should understand Iran is not an Arab country. In fact, the Arabs and the Iranians have historically forever been at each other's throats. And so do we want to drive them together? Do we want to drive Iran into the arms of Russia, which again has long been a country that Iran has been very suspect of, because Iran sits on the Russian border. And Iran was a neighbor of the Soviet Union and was basically in the shadow of it. And so we should just ask our politicians to do lessons learned. And then I think in our history books, we need to be factual about what we present to ourselves. And it's not that we're not patriots. It's that we are patriots. And we want America to do the right thing. And the only way we can learn how to do the right thing is to figure out how we made mistakes in the past.
So Sandy, the reason that's so important is the history is not for you and I and our generation. It's for the people who come after us. And so they don't repeat the same.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the reasons that we want to keep alive the history of the Holocaust is the notion that we don't ever want that to happen again. And we need to teach it in schools. Okay. And we affirmatively teach about that. Germany affirmatively teaches about it in its schools. It's obviously a horrendous error that the German government made. And patriotism in Germany does not require adherence to the notion that the Holocaust was a fiction, okay? That it was a reality. And we need, I'm not saying that the errors that the American government has made in the past are anything like rising to the level of the Holocaust, but we need to keep reminding ourselves of the good things we do and the wonderful place this country is. We also have to remind ourselves about how it is we've made errors. How it is we had Jim Crow laws in the South? Those were obviously errors, right? Those were not part of the American tradition in terms of how we think of democracy and traditions.
Well, slavery is certainly one that should never be forgotten as well, but we have to educate people again, Sandy. Not for you and I, right? It's for people who'll be here after we're long gone. They need to.
That's what social studies is supposed to be. We're supposed to, you know, every kid who goes to school is required to take social studies. And the reason is you're supposed to learn the lessons of history,
yes.
Right? Because one of the things that differentiates human beings from animals is animals inherit all their knowledge by instinct. Okay. They're born with the instincts. We're born with instincts. But if we were left only with our instincts, we would not learn the lessons of generations that have preceded us who have learned the hard way through trial and error about what works and what doesn't work, what works scientifically and doesn't work scientifically, what works health-wise and doesn't work. All those are lessons of history that we need to learn so that we can avoid learning only by trial and error. Because trial and error, in the evolutionary sense, you know what error is in evolution? Death.
You know, Sandy, the rest of the world is focused on their history, what happened. We, the most powerful nation on earth, is the one that doesn't want to focus on the history of our nation. I would
question that. I would say that many countries in the world attempt to provide a revisionist history to their people. It's called propaganda, okay?
Okay.
And propaganda is a problem. And we've always, from the time we were young, we thought that the Soviet Union was the home of propaganda and that Nazi Germany was the home of propaganda under Goebbels. We thought America was a place that lacked that, okay?
Right.
I think the problem that came up in Vietnam and afterwards was the cynical understanding that we do have propaganda.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite local radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app, and we invite you to get social with us by following our network's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook pages. Want even more? CivicMedia.us.
Listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.